How's it, guys, and welcome to yet another episode of The Balanced Mind. I'm so glad you're tuning in today. Well, today we are diving into a topic that hits close to home for so many of us. Yet, it's something we really pause to break down with real honesty. It's about a vow, a quiet, desperate promise that millions of people make to themselves every single day. It usually happens in the middle of the night or in a quiet aftermath of a life-altering crisis. It happens after a breakup so brutal that it leaves you questioning your own judgment, or after the sudden tragic loss of a partner when you're still young and expecting a lifetime together. In that moment, a sheer overwhelm, you make an oath. I am done. I am never, ever putting myself through this kind of pain again. My heart is officially closed for business. If you ever say those words, or if you are living inside that promise right now, I want to take a deep breath with you. You are not cold. You are not broken. You are certainly not wrong for feeling that way. Today we're talking about that oath. We're going to look at why your brain built that massive wall, why that wall made total sense when you built it, and most importantly, why it happens when, or what happens when the wall stays up so long that it starts keeping the very love and care you deserve. To understand why we swear off love, we have to look at what happens inside us when a relationship ends in severe trauma. Now, on the surface, a horrible breakup and the depth of a partner look like two different human experiences. But psychologically, they trigger the same alarm system in your mind and body. They both inflict a sudden, agonizing loss of control. Think about it for a moment. When a relationship ends through deep betrayal, maybe someone cheated, lied, or simply walked away without warning, your foundation crumbles. You don't just lose a partner, you lose your trust in your own intuition. You ask yourself, how did I not see this coming? How could I have let someone get close enough to destroy me like this? On the other hand, when you lose a partner to death, especially when you are young and your life together was just getting started, the shockwave is different, but actually shattering. You hit with the betrayal randomness of life. The future you built in your head is wiped out in a single second. The person who was your safe harbor is suddenly gone. And the grief feels like a weight you can barely carry across the room. In both of these scenarios, your brain reaches the exact same conclusion. That is that connection equals catastrophic pain. When your emotional world collapses, your brain survival network takes over. Your nervous system doesn't analyze the fine details of your emotional life. It operates on pure ancient instinct. It sees a massive wound and it screams, "Danger, danger. Shut down the perimeter. Lock the doors. We cannot survive another hit like this." And so the never again earth is born. So I want to pause here because this is where so many people get stuck in a self-judgment. People think, why am I being so stubborn? Why can't I just let people back in? Why am I pushing everyone away? I want to offer you a completely different way to look at this. Putting up a wall after traumatic loss isn't a sign of weakness or bitterness. It is an intelligent short-term survival strategy. Imagine you get into a terrible accident and you break your arm. What does the doctor do? They put it in a sling or a cast. That cast is stiff, heavy, and restrictive. It stops you from moving your arm, bending your elbow, or getting up, or picking up everything. But you need that cast, don't you? In those first few weeks, that rigid structure protects the broken bone from being jolted or re-injured, so the delicate tissue beneath can begin to fuse back together. That's what happens with the never again mindset. It is an emotional cost. When your heart has been shattered, whether by betrayal or by bereavement, you are walking around with an open, bleeding emotional wound. If you were to jump right back into the vulnerability, every small breeze would cause intolerable agony. So your mind builds a fortress. It shuts down your sensitivity. It turns off your romantic radar. It builds a thick brick wall around your heart so you can catch your breath, gather your pieces, and simply survive the day. If you build that wall, I want you to thank yourself for it. It kept you alive when you felt like you were drowning. It allowed you to wake up, go to work, feed yourself, and keep moving forward when your world was falling apart. The wall served as a vital purpose. But here is the critical catch. The cast begins to come off once the bones are knitted back together. If you leave a cast on your arm for 5 years, what would happen? The muscle would deteriorate. The joints would freeze up. The very thing that was meant to protect your arm ends up crippling it. This is the hidden tragedy of the never again mindset. A wall is a blunt instrument. It doesn't have eyes and it doesn't have a brain. It cannot distinguish between a threat or a blessing. It keeps you out the toxic axis, the liars, and the sullen tragedies. Yes, but it also blocks out the gentle, genuine, loving people who came into your life later. There are people in the world who want to care for you, people who want to listen to you, respect your pace, hold your hand, and offer you safe, quiet affection. But when you are standing behind a solid brick wall with zero doors, those genuine people can't reach you either. You end up in a paradox. You build a wall to protect your life, but in keeping out all possibility of pain, you're also keeping out all possibility of love, joy, and meaningful connections. What started as a temporary armor slowly becomes a permanent emotional prison. You aren't being hurt anymore, but you aren't really living either. You are just safe. And safety, while essential for survival, was never meant to be the final destination of your life. So where does this leave us? If we are listening to this right now, and maybe you realize, well, I've been living behind a wall for 2 years, maybe 5, maybe 10. I don't want you to panic. And I certainly don't want you to go tear down the wall with a slash hammer today. Healing isn't about throwing your doors wide open and letting every stranger walk through your heart unvetted. That wouldn't be healing. That would be reckless. The goal of emotional recovery is not to destroy your protection, it's to evolve it. It's about moving away from a solid, impenetrable wall and starting to build a door with lock. It's about learning how to keep yourself safe while slowly, carefully allowing yourself to peek outside again. It's realizing that you don't have to choose between total isolation and complete vulnerability. There is a middle ground, a place where you can hold on to your wisdom, protect your peace, and still allow caring people to show you who they are. So in our next segment, we're going to talk about what happens when a new, sincere person tries to step into your life while you're still guarding that fortress. We'll look at the trap of comparing new partners to ghosts of the past and how to spot when your self-protection is quietly turning into self-sabotage. So if you're just joining us for the first time, in our first segment, we talked about the never again oath, that protective fortress we built after a devastating breakup or the tragic loss of a partner. We acknowledge why that wall is essential and immediate survival, why we need it so much, but also how, if left up too long, it turns into an emotional prison. Now let's step into the real world of conflict, because life has a funny habit of continuing. You've built your wall, you settled into your routine of self-reliance, you've convinced yourself that you are perfectly fine on your own, and that romantic love is officially a closed chapter in your life. And then someone unexpected knocks on your door. Maybe it's a colleague who starts showing genuine interest. Maybe it's a friend who gently hints that they see you more than just a buddy. Or maybe you meet a stranger, and against all your careful planning, you feel a spark. They are kind. They are patient. They listen when you talk. They respect your space, and they genuinely want to care for you. On paper, this is what healing is supposed to look like. This is the goal, right? So why do your chest tighten? Why does your stomach drop into a pit? Why does your brain start frantically searching for an emergency exit? To answer that, we have to look past simple stubbornness and look at what psychology research tells us about trauma rewires the human mind, or how the trauma rewires our mind. In psychological literature, particularly in the work of Dr. Stephen Porges and his groundbreaking polyvagal theory, there's a term you should know: neuroception. Neuroception is the subconscious radar your nervous system uses to scan the environment for cues of safety or danger. Completely below your conscious awareness. When you've lived through a high-stress trauma like a toxic relationship ending in betrayal or the sudden loss of someone you relied on, your internal nervous system gets calibrated with high alert mode. Your brain learns that drop off the hand danger can strike at any second. Here is where the paradox happens. When your nervous system has been wired for survival, chaos feels similar, but peace feels suspicious. Research highlighted in Psychology Today underscores this exact pattern. When a person has been traumatized, meet someone who is calm, predictable, and genuinely warm, the brain doesn't register safety. It registers a trap. Your mind thinks, this is too good to be true. What are they hiding? When is the other shoe going to drop? You aren't pushing good people away because you are heartless. You are pushing them away because your nervous system is mistaking emotional safety for an emotional incoming ambush. And that brings us to the two distinct traps we fall into when we're trying to evaluate new people. Let's look at the breakup scenario first. When a relationship ends in severe emotional destruction, whether through cheating, deception, or sudden abandonment, you develop what researchers in relationship psychology call hypervigilance. You become an investigator who treats every new prospect as guilty until proven innocent. So when a new caring person steps into your life, you aren't actually looking at them. You are putting them on a trial for what your ex did. So you compare the new person with the old person. If you don't take a few hours to reply to a text message, your mind doesn't say, oh, you know what, they're probably busy at work. Your hyper-vigilance screams, they're putting away, they're lying to me. They are just like my ex. If they give you a genuine compliment, you don't hear love, you hear manipulation. If they make a minor, honest human mistake, you don't see an opportunity for communication, you see confirmation that all human beings are deceitful. Studies on relationship attachment from the universities like Harvard and Columbia show that hypervigilance forces us to put new partners through impossible stress tests. We require them to prove they will never hurt us, never miscommunicate, and never disappoint us before we will give them a fraction of our trust. And here is a tragic reality. No healthy human being can pass that test. Because even the most loving, honest partner is still a human being. They will have bad days. You will have a misunderstanding sometimes. It's part of being human. But when you are viewing them through the lens of past trauma, you mistake a normal imperfection for catastrophic danger. You end up punishing a good person for crimes committed by somebody else. Now, let's turn to another path. The experience of losing a partner to death, especially when you were young and your life together felt like it was just beginning. This trap looks a little different, but it leads to the exact same room of isolation. We call it the phantom standard. For decades, traditional psychology taught that grief was about getting over it or surviving ties with the person who died. But pioneering research by the grief researchers Dr. Dennis Klaus and his colleagues transformed our understanding through what is known as continuing bonds theory. Continuing bonds theory proved that healthy grieving doesn't mean erasing the person who has passed. It means finding a new internal way to hold onto the memory while living your life. Where people get stuck, however, is when those memories turn into an unachievable benchmark. When a partner dies, our mind naturally engages in selective memory preservation. We remember the warmth, the laughter, and the deepest moments of safety we felt with them. We forget the minor arguments over household chores or the boring Tuesday nights. Over time, that late partner becomes an ideal figure that we call a phantom. So, when a new person enters your life, an unfair, invisible competition begins. This new living human being isn't just competing with a regular person, they are competing with a polished memory. You start making mental comparisons. They don't make coffee the way my late partner did. Their voice doesn't smooth me the exact same style. They aren't them. we conclude. And beneath those comparisons is often a heavy layer of guilt. You worry that if you enjoy dinner with someone new or laugh at their jokes, you are betraying the memory of the person you lost. Out of an instinctual desire to remain loyal to the past, you shut the door on the present. Whether you are running from a fear of being betrayed, gain, or clinging to real ideal memory of someone you lost, the ultimate result is identical. You push genuine warmth away. And here is the hard truth you have to face on the balanced mind. Self-protection is meant to keep bad people out, but when it turns into chronic self-sabotage, it ends up keeping the good people out and leaving you completely alone with pain. Emotionally healthy, mature people have boundaries too. A sincere person who steps into your life will be patient with you. They will listen to your story, respect your peace, and walk gently beside you. But they will not stay forever. Because it is very hard to stay with someone when you are constantly compared to someone they lost. When every second sentence is about the lost person and how they used to react, that is a clear signal that say, listen, I'm not ready and I do not want you in my life, and I push you away. Don't be surprised if that person then steps away and leaves you alone again. If any of this is hitting too close to home for you today, please just take a breath. Recognizing these patterns isn't a sign that you are broken. It is the very first step towards freedom. You built these defense mechanisms when you were bleeding, but you are not in the original emergency state anymore. If you have more wisdom and strength and more agency today than you used to get, that you used to have, then you have grown. In the first two segments, we did some heavy lifting. We validated why you built a wall around your heart after crushing a breakup or the sudden loss of a partner. You looked at how your brain tried to protect you and how that protective armor can slowly turn into self-sabotage, punishing away genuine caring people because emotional safety feels strange or scary to a traumatized nervous system. Now we pivot, because understanding why you are stuck is the only half the battle. The real work is learning how to get unstuck. If you're listening to this right now, from inside your fortress, I want to reassure you. Healing does not mean going out today and tearing down your wall with a sledgehammer. It does not mean throwing your heart open to the world and blindly trusting whoever walks by. That wouldn't be healing, that would be reckless. Real recovery is about transformation. It's about moving away from a solid, impenetrable brick wall and building a small door with a lock and a peephole. Today we are going to walk through four practical research-backed steps to help you soften your guard, protect your peace, and allow love back into your life at the pace you are completely in control with. Let's look at step one. Replace the wall with a filter. The first step in the process comes from a cognitive behavioral study and acceptance and commitment therapy, what psychologists call cognitive reframing. When you live behind a wall, your decision making is binary, 100% open or 100% closed. You either trust someone completely or you don't trust them at all. A filter, however, operates on discernment. A filter allows you to evaluate people based on their actual present behavior rather than their past trauma. It allows warmth and care to pass through while catching red flags and keeping toxic out. Articles in Psychology Today frequently highlighted that hypervigilance makes us react to ghosts instead of facts. So, when you feel panic rising when dealing with a new person, teach yourself to ask one grinding question. Am I reacting to what the person is actually doing right now, or am I reacting to my ex and what they used to do? If someone is late for dinner, a wall says, they don't care about me, just like my ex. But the filter says, let me see how they handle being late. Do they apologize sincerely? Do they respect my time? Let me judge them by their response today, not someone else's mistakes 5 years ago. Discernment isn't about letting your guard down instantly. It's about giving people a fair canvas to show you who they truly are, piece by piece. And then we have the second step, and that is the expandable heart. Our second step addresses the deep guilt that often blocks people who have lost a partner to death, or those who left a profound soul-level connection in the past. There is a common silent myth that if you open your heart to someone new, you are somehow diluting, betraying, or replacing the love you had before. Grief researchers Dr. Margaret Strubbe and Dr. Hank Scott, who developed the influential dual process model of bereavement, found that healthy grieving involves oscillating between mourning the loss and restoring the life. Their work demonstrates that moving forward is not an act of moving away from the deceased, it's the act of carrying them with you as you grow. Your heart is not a glass measuring cup with a limited amount of space. You don't have to pour out your love or for your late partner or your past to make room for a new person. The human heart is expanding, is an expanding muscle. Think of a parent having a second child. Loving the second baby doesn't mean they love the firstborn any less. The parent's heart simply expands to hold both. Loving again is not the act of replacing. It is the act of expansion. It is proof that your capacity for love survives the storm. When you allow someone new into your life, you aren't closing the book on your past. You are simply beginning a new chapter in the same story. Then we have step three. Practice micro-vulnerability. Renowned researcher Dr. Brené Brown at the University of Houston spent decades studying the vulnerability and trust. One of her most famous findings is that trust is not built through grand gestures. Trust is built in tiny, almost invincible moments, what she calls the marble jar of concept. Remember, we talked about that before. Every time someone treats a small moment of your vulnerability with care, a marble goes into a jar. People in the never again mindset avoid relationships because they think vulnerability requires a massive leap of faith off a cliff. And it doesn't. You don't have to hand over the keys of your heart on day two. Instead, practice micro-vulnerability. Micro-vulnerability means dipping your toe in the water with low stakes openness. And it looks something like this. Sharing a minor preference or a small honest opinion. Second, you can admit to a new person, you know what, I'm a little nervous tonight because I've been hurt in the past, so you've been vulnerable just a bit. Then it is setting a small boundary and watching how the other person reacts to it. Relationships researchers, the Gottman Institute, call these bits of connection. When you drop a small piece of vulnerability, pay attention to what the other person does with it. Do they listen? Do they honor your boundary? Do they offer comfort without trying to fix you? If they handle your micro vulnerability with respect, you put the marble into the jar and open the door half an inch more. If they dismiss or mock it, you step back, you return total control of your own peace. And then step four, separate the blueprint from the person. Whether you are trying to protect yourself from a liar and missing someone who passed away, you must give a new partner permission to be a completely original human being. They will not express affection the exact same way your past partner did. They will not have the same humor, same habits, or same energy. And that is not a flaw, that is their individuality. If you constantly measure a new person against a ghost or a villain, you rob them from the chance to show who they really are, their unique brilliance. Give them a clean slate. Let them build a new kind of connection with you. One that isn't built on flexing the past, but on sharing the present. So, moving from never again to maybe again is one of the bravest journeys a human being can take. It takes incredibly courage to look at the records of your past and say, I suffered, but I refuse to let the pain dictate the rest of my life. You don't have to rush. You don't have to force it. You just have to be willing to leave the door unlocked. So in the final segment, we are going to bring all these pieces together. We'll talk about how to know when you're truly ready, how to cultivate self-compassion when fear flares up, and I'll leave you with the final take-home message to hold on to this week. Stay with us, we will be right back. If you've been with us from the very beginning of this episode, we've walked through some dark, challenging, but deeply necessary territory. We started in segment one by looking at the Never Again Earth, that sudden protective wall we throw up around our hearts when a relationship ends in a crushing betrayal or a partner is taken from us too soon. We validated why your brain built that wall to survive the initial shockwave. In segment two, we looked at what happens when life keeps moving and someone new tries to reach you. We explore how trauma tricks your nervous system into mistaking peace for danger, and how we trap ourselves in a hypervigilance or a measure living, breathing people against the ghost of the past. Then in segment three, we began turning the key in the lock. We talked about moving from walls to filters, practicing micro-vulnerability in small, safe dosages, and realizing that your heart doesn't replace the love you lost. It simply expands to holding new chapters and opening up. Now in segment four, we want to look at what it actually takes to walk through the door into your future. How you know when you're truly ready. What do you do when the fear flames up again? And how do you navigate this journey when the emotional weight feels too heavy to carry on your own? So let's start by one of the biggest myths about emotional recovery. Being ready is not the same as being 100% fearless. If you are waiting for a magical morning where you wake up and feel zero anxiety, no doubt, and zero fear of getting hurt ever again, you will be waiting for the rest of your life. Courage is in the absence of fear. Courage is the feeling, the fear acknowledging it and making a small step forward anyway. So what does genuine readiness look like? Real readiness isn't about feeling invincible. It shows up in subtle, beautiful shifts in your daily mindset. First, curiosity begins to replace cynicism. Instead of thinking all people are unworthy or untrustworthy or I'll never feel spark again, a small voice inside you start asking, I wonder who else is out there. I wonder what a healthy, calm relationship would actually feel like. Second, you can talk about your past without reliving the emergency. You still acknowledge the pain of breakup or the grief of your loss, but it no longer knocks you off your feet for 3 days straight. The wound has become a scar. And third, you stop expecting a future partner to save you, and you stop expecting them to destroy you. You realize that your peace, your self-worth, and your security belongs to you. A partner is there to share in your life, not to carry the burden of making you whole. Even when you start stepping out of your fortress, there will be moments when you would feel the old fear comes roaring back. You might be on a third date with a wonderful person or sitting on the couch enjoying a quiet evening, and suddenly panic hits you out of nowhere. What am I doing? I'm opening up myself to be shattered again. When that happens, the absolute worst thing you can do is to judge yourself for feeling afraid. Don't say, "What is wrong with me? Why am I so broken?" Instead, practice the psychologist Dr. Kirsten Neff calls self-compassion. When fear flares up, talk to yourself that exact same way you would talk to a frightening 5-year-old child. Recognizing that the panic isn't a sign of danger, it's just an old protective part of your brain trying to do its job. Place a hand on your chest, take a deep breath slowly, and say to yourself, "You know what? I see you, fear. Thank you for trying to keep me safe, but we aren't in the old emergency place anymore. I am safe right now in this moment, and I have the wisdom to handle whatever comes next." Healing isn't a straight line. Having a moment of panic doesn't mean you've gone backwards. It means you are a human being and you are doing brave work. Now let's completely be honest with each other. Everything we talked about today, untangled past trauma, learning to trust again, dismantling rigid walls, and working through deep grief is profoundly hard work. Sometimes reading articles or listening to podcast episodes like this one gives you the spark you need. But when you try to do the heavy lifting alone, in the quiet of your own home, it feels overwhelming. The walls we built around our hearts can be thick, heavy, and deeply embedded. If you are listening to this today and you realize that you are up, that you can open your heart again, but you feel completely stuck in the never again loop and don't know what to do or how to move the bricks of the wall on your own, I want to encourage you to reach out for professional support. You don't have to navigate the dark woods without a flashlight. As a holistic counselor, my work is centered on helping people like you navigating these exact emotional crossroads. Holistic counseling means we don't just look at the symptom or the label, we look at the whole picture of you and who you are. We look at your mind and your nervous system, your past stories, and your betrayal values to help you heal from the inside out. Whether you are carrying the heavy weight of traumatic breakup or working through a deep, complex layers of grief after losing a partner, you do not carry it alone. If you feel ready to talk to someone who will listen without judgment, help understand your nervous system, and guide you in building healthy, safe boundaries, please visit the website dionbicycle.co.za. Take your time, explore the resources, and when you're ready, reach out. Again, the website address is www.dionbicycle.co.za. A safe space is waiting for you when you are ready to take that next step. So as we bring this episode of The Balanced Mind to a close, I want to leave you with one final thought to carry you through the coming week. The pain you experienced is real. The betrayal hurts. The loss was devastating. The earth was made to shut down, and Maggie said never again was an act of pure survival, and it kept you alive when you felt like you couldn't breathe. Thank your past for surviving. But remember this, survival was only ever meant to be the bridge of living. You were not put on this earth merely to hide behind the brick wall, watching life pass by through a tiny crack in the fortress. You deserve warmth. You deserve care. You deserve to laugh with someone without waiting for the floor to drop. And you deserve to experience a love that feels safe, gentle, and peaceful. Unlocking the door doesn't mean forgetting who you've been or where you've been. It simply means choosing to believe that your story isn't over yet. Take it one day at a time. Practice micro-vulnerability. Replace your walls with smart filters. And above all, be extraordinary. And above all, be extraordinarily gentle with yourself as you heal. Thank you so much for spending the time with me on The Balanced Mind. If this episode spoke to your heart, share it with someone who might need to hear it today. Until next time, keep your mind balanced, stay brave, and take gentle care of yourself. Good night and take care. Cheers.